From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. Conflict in the Middle East has dominated recent headlines, but unrest in Somalia could soon destabilize much of East Africa. Somalia's capital, Mogadishu, was recently seized by the Supreme Islamic Courts Council. When that militant group's troops appeared to threaten Somalia's young government, neighboring Ethiopia stepped in. Peace talks have since sputtered, and now two countries with a history of brutal conflict stand on the verge yet again. I spoke with John Prendergast, senior advisor of the International Crisis Group and an expert on the region. He says the courts filled a void when America pulled out of Somalia after the now infamous Black Hawk Down incident in 1993.
And in the context over the intervening decade, the Islamic courts began to assert themselves basically organically, not very much funded from the Middle East, but really a local Somali entity that was a response to the anarchy that the warlords were basically creating. And so within the early part of this decade, as the U.S. looked around in the aftermath of 9/11 and saw the growth of these courts, the harboring of some al-Qaeda suspects, and other negative trends in Somalia, we decided to re-engage once again, and re-engage wrongly once again, and on the side of some of the most venal elements in Somali society, which were these very same warlords that had destroyed the country. So we started providing assistance to them to counter the Islamic court phenomenon, and what has resulted has been a radicalization of the courts, of the Islamic courts, strengthening of the courts against these people, growing popular support for them as they finally defeated the U.S.-backed warlords in June, consolidated control over the capital city, Mogadishu, and have expanded their territory. Bringing it up to the present then, Ethiopia, which of course is a U.S. ally in the war on terror and is very concerned about the growth of Islamic fundamentalism in the region, has now deployed forces into Somalia against the Islamic courts, and they're basically standing on a precipice between, on the one hand, the Ethiopian army, and on the other hand, the Islamic court militias. So it remains to be seen who's going to strike a match and hurl it onto this gasoline pool, but it's poised on the brink of an explosion, and the coming weeks will determine where we're going.
We'll talk about the Ethiopian troops and their involvement in just a moment, but I'm curious, in terms of this Supreme Islamic Court Council, so many people will hear the words Islamic Court and assume that this is like the courts that we have here in the States, and it is not.
Yeah, the Islamic courts, it's more of a kind of a rudimentary authority that, again, organically has sprung up in a number of parts of Somalia where a local area, fed up with the anarchy and the predatory behavior of some of these warlords, basically asserts Islamic law. They set up this court, which then hears cases to arbitrate on various issues, that are disputes that arise, but more importantly, establishes a militia that then imposes order on a particular area. And this has provided a great deal of stability in the areas where those courts have been established. So there's actually a benefit to the Somalis. We can't just dismiss these guys as Taliban-esque radicals who are just, you know, crazy and running around doing nothing for the people of Somalia. They've actually provided tangible benefits that the warlords and the government the U.S. used to support back in the 80s and 90s never did provide. So they also deliver social services. So there's a lot of stuff that comes out, positive things that come out of these courts. The problem, of course, is that some of the courts are highly radicalized and have provided sanctuary for al-Qaeda suspects, for people that have actually committed, or at least are suspected to have committed, specific terrorist acts against U.S. interests, particularly the bombings of our embassies in Tanzania and Kenya.
John, here's what's most important, I think, that people may miss. We're not talking about only Somalis and Somalia and Ethiopians. We're really talking about not only that region, but the repercussions in the Islamic world in general.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Osama bin Laden's already hooked onto this thing, and he's rhetorically backing the courts there in Mogadishu. He's mobilizing sentiment against foreign intervention in Somalia, which is a very hot-button issue everywhere in the world, nationalism, but certainly Somalis are very xenophobic and nationalistic and very sensitive to this idea that the U.S. can support warlords and that the Ethiopians can send troops. And so the courts are growing in their influence and support, and the repercussions are broader than just Somalia and the very surrounding region, because the suspects that have been harbored have a demonstrable track record of involvement in terrorism. So it's not an issue to be taken lightly. It's a national security interest issue for the United States, which makes it just extraordinary that the U.S. is so passive in response to what's happening there diplomatically. We haven't really engaged. We haven't sent people over there to really work the diplomatic efforts to try to prevent a full-scale war from erupting.
That was going to be my next question, that you have a young fledgling government trying to find a foothold in all of this on the Somali side. You have the history, as we've talked about, monies being poured in by previous administrations. When you look at the Bush administration and the United States government in general, even prior to this, what do you think has to be done from this side to help bring stability to that area if, in fact, you believe that this would help in the, quote, war against terror?
We're missing a partner in our efforts on counterterrorism, and the Somalis, much more importantly, are missing a government that can adjudicate disputes, that can provide security, and that can provide social services. It just doesn't exist. It hasn't existed since the early 1990s, the only country in the world that doesn't have a government. So it is time for the U.S. to really roll up its sleeves diplomatically, to cost nothing to us, and get involved in the processes that could lead to a negotiated government of national unity, a negotiation that would have to occur between the Islamic courts and the Ethiopian-backed entity or authority that exists in one of the small towns outside of Mogadishu now, which is claiming to be a central government but has no authority anywhere. So there has to be that kind of a negotiated government of national unity, and the U.S. is the only actor that everyone views with respect and with that would bring leverage to the table. They want the U.S. involved, and I think working with allies, working with regional actors like Kenya and Sudan and Ethiopia, we could probably fairly quickly secure at least an initial ceasefire and a process that could bring about a government of national unity that could then be the kind of partner on counterterrorism that we need to have for our own national security in the coming years.
John, we're seeing a lot of back and forth, off and on, if you will, with these ceasefire, these peace talks going on. This could be really a bloody situation if people aren't careful.
Exactly. And, you know, and the blood, to be frank, is not really the issue and the problem, because if we look at what precipitated, what prompted President Bush Sr. to send tens of thousands of American troops to Somalia, it was the famine that resulted from the war in the early 1990s. The same thing would happen again now. If the Ethiopians went toe-to-toe, full-scale war with the Islamic Court militias, we would see probably a few thousand battlefield deaths, but we would see hundreds of thousands of people who would be put immediately at risk of starvation and of the diseases related to malnutrition that would then create the huge mortality rates that we've seen in Ethiopia, we've seen in Sudan, and we saw in Somalia when 250,000 people died in 91 and 92 before we sent our own troops.
We know that the Bush administration has sent a steady stream of intelligence officers into Somalia to monitor the situation with al-Qaeda. So it's hard for them to suggest they wouldn't know what was going on in this region fully.
Yeah, it was a profound miscalculation. I mean, in 2003, the Bush administration began to provide through the Central Intelligence Agency and through those intelligence officers that made their monthly visits to Mogadishu, they began to provide cash to these warlords to counter the Islamic courts. All this did was inflame Somali sentiments against the United States and in support of the Islamic courts, because they saw the U.S. was intervening in behalf of the vultures that were just tearing that country to pieces. They just picked the wrong horse, basically. The intention was right. You know, the U.S. wanted to be able to keep our eyes on the suspects of al-Qaeda that are in Mogadishu now. They wanted to be able to counter the influence of some extremists, but they used absolutely the wrong actors. Again, rather than getting involved in building government in Somalia, we picked a few strong men that we thought could enforce our will. The worst thing you can possibly do is ignore what people want locally and then tell people locally, can you do us a favor? And that just wasn't happening. So now we're compounding the error. Now that all of our warlords have been pounded out of the country, we've now sort of disengaged. And, you know, we do our diplomacy from New York through an international contact group where we sit around in lunchrooms in the United Nations and talk about what might happen in Somalia. That's ridiculous. We need to send an envoy out there now to begin to help support negotiations between the main actors. That's the only way that we're going to get a solution in Somalia in the near future.
John, two quick questions as we close out. The first being, are you at all optimistic about the idea of these peace talks furthering themselves, and how fruitful will they be?
Yeah, the peace talks now, remarkably, everyone else is crapped out. So the only group that, the only country that stood up is Sudan, which, of course, is highly problematic because they have ties with these Islamic courts. That's why the U.S. has to get more directly involved. I don't have a lot of hope for them because there isn't any work being done in advance of the peace talks to really work the issues that might be necessary to bring about a compromise government and national unity. But if the United States and the Brits work with some of the African nations to get in there and do the right thing, we could do that in the next week. I mean, it doesn't take a lot to ramp up. You just send one or two people that have some experience there and work it. But the potential for fairly significant growth of terrorist threat in Somalia is real. As the territory which the Islamic courts control expands, there are greater potential for additional investment by terrorist networks to find sanctuary there and begin to plan attacks. So I'm quite worried that the longer we sit back and allow this to fester, that this will create the haven that we've always worried about occurring right on the Indian Ocean coast. And I just think that that will have profoundly negative repercussions for the region and up into the Persian Gulf for years to come.
John, thanks for the insight. Always good to talk to you.
Thank you, Ed.
John Prendergast is a senior advisor with the International Crisis Group. Coming up, a member of the president's own party is lobbying for the right to sue the commander-in-chief. And Bill Cosby says one newspaper's optimism about black men is misleading. We'll discuss these and other topics on our roundtable.